the first time that the LGBTI community has gotten together nationally for this kind of thing.
The popular show featured four colorful, fuzzy little creatures with antennas on their heads.
Everything has always been around. It's during the pre-Christianity. We've been born biologically males, but we chose to become women.
Inspired by Telstar's launch, gay British sound innovator Joe Meek produced the hit song performed by the Tornadoes.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Eurocourt nixes inkblot tests for queer asylum seekers, Australians map a future that's better together, and fond farewells to Mama Roger and Tinky Winky. Those stories and more this week because you tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 27, 2018. The European Court of Justice decided this week that people seeking asylum because of anti-queer persecution in their homelands should not be forced to take arbitrary personality or other psychological tests to prove they're LGBT. The judges, based in Luxembourg, ruled that such questionable tests amount to a disproportionate interference in the private life of the asylum seeker. The decision came in the case of an unnamed Nigerian gay man who sought asylum in Hungary based on the persecution of sexual and gender-variant minorities in his homeland. A government-appointed psychologist quizzed him about intimate details of his life and gave him a Rorschach inkblot test and other personality tests to determine if he was, in fact, gay. The psychologist concluded that he was not, his asylum plea was rejected, and the case was appealed to the European Court of Justice. Its rulings are binding on all 28 EU member states, including other countries that currently conduct psychological tests on asylum seekers.
A court in Hungary must now review the case of the Nigerian gay man in light of the Eurocourt's ruling. The current right-wing government originally rejected his asylum plea in 2015, when Hungary was facing a huge influx of migrants from several countries fleeing conflicts in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and parts of Africa. According to the BBC, most of them moved to Germany via Austria, and Hungary then built a formidable border fence to keep migrants out. The EU Agency for Fundamental Rights reports that hundreds of LGBT people who fear persecution in Chechnya, Africa, and the Middle East have sought asylum in Europe.
The American LGBT advocacy group Immigration Equality filed federal lawsuits this week against the U.S. State Department on behalf of two same-gender couples and their children, some of whom have been denied American citizenship. Allison Blixt, an American citizen, and Stefania Zaccari, an Italian, live in London. Each woman conceived a son using her own egg and an unknown sperm donor. Both women are listed as the only parents on the children's birth certificates. Allison gave birth to their son, Masi, whose U.S. citizenship was affirmed by the U.S. Embassy in London. However, the embassy refused to recognize the U.S. citizenship of their son, Lucas, birthed by his Italian mom, Stefania, because, according to the lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, Lucas does not have a biological relationship to a U.S. citizen. Andrew Dvash Banks, a U.S. citizen, and his husband, Elad, a citizen of Israel, were married in Canada and now live in Los Angeles. They're the fathers of twin sons. One was conceived with Andrew's sperm and one with Elad's, using eggs from the same surrogate donor who gave birth to the two boys moments apart in Canada. According to their lawsuit, filed in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, and for the same reasons cited in the Lesbian Moms lawsuit, the U.S. Embassy in Toronto said that Aiden, the child conceived with Andrew's sperm, is a U.S. citizen, but his brother Ethan, conceived with Elad's sperm, is not.
Aaron C. Morris, executive director of Immigration Equality, told reporters during a conference call on January 22nd that U.S. law entitles children born abroad to citizenship as long as one of their married parents is a U.S. citizen. If a mother and father walk into a consulate and have a marriage certificate and birth certificate, he said, they're never asked any questions about the biology of the child. The lawsuits charge that the State Department is defying U.S. Supreme Court rulings that same-gender married couples must be given access to all the rights and benefits available to heterosexual married couples, and is treating some of the plaintiff's children as if they were born out of wedlock. Without citizenship, a person is denied the right to reside permanently in the U.S., and the right to obtain a U.S. passport, among other benefits. The suits each ask their respective courts to declare the birth citizenship of the affected children.
Trinidad and Tobago-born LGBT rights activist Jason Jones will be taking his homeland to court this week over its laws that criminalize private, consensual, adult, same-gender sex. Penalties range from 5 to 25 years in prison. Jones, who currently lives in London, is challenging the British colonial-era buggery laws as a violation of the country's constitution. Jones was disowned by his family after he came out as gay and was forced to migrate to the UK. He's received dozens of death threats for his activism, but remains determined. "I am a criminal simply because I am a gay man," he says. Legal analysts believe that a ruling for Jones could affect similar laws that criminalize same-gender sex in other Caribbean nations, including Grenada, Barbados, and Jamaica. It would be a long process, however. Jones told reporters that even if the judge rules that the buggery laws are unconstitutional, the decision must then be ratified by Trinidad and Tobago lawmakers. The Attorney General would also have 6 months to file an appeal.
The successor to Zimbabwe's notoriously homophobic president, Robert Mugabe, has disappointed queer activists by refusing to speak out against the country's harsh laws against same-gender sex. Mugabe infamously compared LGBT people to dogs and pigs, and routinely used sexual and gender-variant people as scapegoats in his always inflammatory speeches to deflect from the country's many woes. Mugabe was ousted after 37 years in power late last year by one of his key lieutenants, 75-year-old Emmerson Mnangagwa. While he's seen as a modernist whose main goals target the country's floundering economy, Mnangagwa said during an interview on CNN this week when asked about advancing the rights of LGBT people that it was up to them to lobby for it and that it's not my duty to campaign for it. Asked about legal marriage for same-gender couples, he said that in our constitution, it is banned, and it is my duty to obey my constitution.
Violent deaths of LGBT people in Brazil have reached an all-time high. The country's oldest advocacy organization, Grupo Gay de Bahia, reported 387 murders and 58 suicides of sexual and gender-variant minorities in 2017. That's a 30% increase from the 327 deaths reported in 2016. While Brazil has a high overall homicide rate, the group's report this week concluded that the rising levels of anti-LGBT violence have been caused, in part, by the appearance and increasing media coverage of ultra-conservative politicians.
A report this week by the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs said 2017 was also the deadliest year on record for LGBT people in the United States. The organization counted 52 anti-queer homicides last year. That's an 86% increase from those reported in 2016, and the highest number in the organization's 20-year history of tracking anti-LGBT hate crimes. A majority of the victims were transgender women or cisgender gay men of color. "This report is a wake-up call for all of us," a press release warned. "Our communities live in an increasingly hostile and dangerous climate after a year of anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and policies coming from the White House, federal government agencies, state and local sources, and in our communities across the country."
A Harris poll commissioned by the LGBT media advocacy group GLAAD seems to confirm the downturn in acceptance of sexual and gender-variant minorities in the U.S. in the past year. Less than half of non-LGBT adults, 49%, said they were very or somewhat comfortable around LGBT people in 2017. That's down from 53% in 2016 and the lowest acceptance figure since GLAAD first commissioned the annual survey in 2014. Sarah Kate Ellis, the group's president, told USA Today that they were a bit surprised by the scale and swiftness of the reversal of acceptance. "But if you are LGBT and living in America, you are seeing this every day," she said.
But finally, news broke on January 26th that the U.S. First Circuit Court of Appeals had upheld a $700,000 jury award for Lori Franchina, a lesbian firefighter who endured constant harassment from her coworkers at the Providence, Rhode Island Fire Department. A three-judge panel of the Boston-based Federal Appeals Court found that sexual orientation can be a factor in a sex-plus case. That is, the harassing comments involve both gender and sexual orientation-based bias. And that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 allows for the possibility of multiple discriminatory factors. That statute prohibits employment practices that discriminate because of race, color, national origin, sex, including pregnancy, and religion. The Obama administration and several LGBT legal advocacy groups have argued that anti-LGBT workplace discrimination is prohibited under Title VII because sex includes sexual orientation and gender identity. A number of lower courts have agreed with that interpretation. Many Americans falsely believe that LGBT people are already protected from employment discrimination by federal law. In fact, 26 states also offer no protections at all from workplace bias against sexual and gender variant people. Queer advocacy groups are saying that the First Circuit ruling is important because, if it's appealed as expected, it could be the case that forces the U.S. Supreme Court to rule on whether or not it's okay to discriminate against LGBT people at work.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending January 27th, 2018. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
Conservative Christian televangelist Jerry Falwell charged that one of the Teletubbies was gay.
The word Fafine is a Samoan word. It derives from the word Fafine, which is woman. Fa'a is become like a woman.
We'll boldly go where no gay had gone before in 1962 and bid farewell to two voices that sadly left Earth this week later in the program. But first...
Come dance with me, that's what I like. Cause everyone together makes me feel alright. It's better when we're together. It's better when we're together now.
What comes after marriage equality? The Better Together Conference brought about 600 Australian queer activists to Melbourne Town Hall in mid-January to address that question. Members of grassroots groups from around the country gathered at the behest of the newly formed Equality Project. Effie Cook of Radio 3CR's Women on the Line program spoke with one of the key organizers.
This is the first time that the LGBTI community has gotten together nationally for this kind of thing.
Lee Carney is a lawyer with the Human Rights Law Center.
Even though the No campaign has really professionalized and built their databases and really increased their funding base, this was kind of a way for the Yes campaign or the LGBTI campaign is to get together and talk about how we might better work together and coordinate our efforts into the future. Obviously, the formal Yes campaign, the Equality campaign, they don't have any staff anymore. We don't have that same kind of infrastructure that we built up moving ahead with these kinds of issues. So it was really important that we talk about what we can do on, a shoestring budget with all of our volunteers, as most of the LGBTI community organisations are run.
What were the outcomes to the conference, or is it too early to say?
I think we're still trying to figure out exactly what the outcomes from the conference are. I think there were some fairly broad themes that we could agree on. Firstly, the LGBTI community, post-marriage equality, needs to work together to make sure that, we don't leave behind trans and gender diverse and intersex people in their less visible but just as important struggles that they're facing in their lives. And also that, maybe there's some way that we could organise together, but... I think we're really excited about the successes of last year and hopeful that Australia is becoming a more inclusive and accepting society where You know, people are treated with dignity and respect for who we are, and we're really hopeful that we can move to a place where LGBTI people no longer have to fight to be treated equally under the law and to have our rights to, you know, all of our human rights equally respected.
We're gonna work for change together. Work for change together.
Thanks to Radio 3CR Melbourne's Effie Cook for that interview with Lee Carney of the Human Rights Law Center. For more information about the Equality Project, visit theequalityproject.org.au. 3CR Melbourne's Women on the Line is distributed by Australia's Community Radio Network with funding from the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
A rainbow salutes Earth's first telecommunications satellite after a couple of worthwhile commemorations.
A Teletubby meets his match. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In the spring of 1998, a British show for preschoolers called Teletubbies came to PBS. The popular show featured four colorful, fuzzy little creatures with antennas on their heads and TV screens embedded in their bellies. Living in an idyllic countryside populated by giant rabbits, a friendly vacuum cleaner, and a son with the face of a baby. But in early 1999, a storm came to Teletubby Land. Conservative Christian televangelist Jerry Falwell charged that one of the Teletubbies was gay, and his name was Tinky Winky. After all, he was purple, the gay pride color, had a triangular antenna on his head, and sometimes carried a red purse. Falwell warned that the show was intentionally promoting a gay lifestyle to children. It seemed Falwell was living in a fantasy land of his own. This Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Glenn Lash, in Philadelphia.
The actor who portrayed Tinky Winky, Simon Shelton, died last week at the age of 52. Shelton was also known as Simon Barnes, a ballet dancer and choreographer before he replaced the original Tinky Winky. Dave Thompson claimed he was fired from the Teletubbies show because he played Tinky as gay. When asked about that, Shelton said he thought it was just silly to ask whether a three-year-old was gay. The sudden death of Samoan Fa'afafine leader Roger Stanley last week has rocked the LGBTQI communities of the South Pacific. Also known by the traditional name So'olo Tutuali Roshni and by the affectionate nickname Mama Roger, the Samoa Observer named Stanley one of its People of the Year in 2017. When our friends Katie Cook and Maggie Young started their Sapphic Nomads trip around the world in late 2012, Stanley starred in the first interview they sent back home.
We set off on an adventure in search of LGBT people and communities. We were curious about the range of experiences of our LGBT brothers and sisters around the world and how they compared with our own. We are a tad geographically challenged. We are not social activists. We wouldn't call ourselves politically savvy. But we hope to set out with what Buddhists call a beginner's mind, with an attitude of openness and a lack of preconception, and a goal to not only connect with LGBT members, but to help them connect with one another, so that we can help decrease that feeling of isolation so many of us experience. We call ourselves the Sapphic Nomads. We begin our journey in independent Samoa, a small grouping of islands in the South Pacific where homosexuality and what they call impersonation of the opposite gender are, as of now, illegal. We had heard about the long tradition of fa'afafines, often referred to as a third gender, in Samoan culture. We were curious to learn more. We met with the president of the Fa'afafine Association, Roger Stanley, to get a better sense of the fa'afafine identity.
Papa Fine, or the type of people that we are, is very unique here in Samoa. First and foremost, is the word for Fafine is a Samoan word. It derives from the word Fafine, which is woman. Fa'a is to become like a woman. So you can never find this word anywhere else but Samoan. Fa'a Fafine, to become like a woman. Fafine has always been here and always been around in Samoa during the pre-Christianity. We've been born biologically males, but we chose to become women because most of us feel that it's from inside, it's from the heart, that we tend to be like this. We love to become women, and we do all the things like women. We dress like women. We apply makeup like women. And in relation to the culture, is that we do the chores of mainly women.
We then asked Roger where the Fa'afafines fit into the LGBT community.
We have heard about all these medical, we call it medical terminologies, you know, transgender, transsexual. The definitions of those terminology can be applied to us. But with us here, we're a bit reluctant to be called or to be labelled with those medical terms. So we only do sexual contact or sexual favours with straight men. We just do not have sexual contact with another Fafine. We call that lesbians. I'm not a man, I'm a Fafine. I can be a woman having sex with men, but I'm not a man having sex with men. That's one thing that you should know about our culture and our men, straight men. The moment they find out you're gay, it's very unpopular, and you may get into trouble. And our men can freely have sex with us, with the Fafine, no problem, no questions asked. But with another straight male, it's a no-no. We never refer to ourselves as gay men. Although the stuff that we're doing and, you know, our sexual orientation is exactly the same as gay.
We then met with Fa'afafine Alex Su'a in a local cafe. Alex works as a lawyer in Apia and is the former president of the Fa'afafine Association. He is now the leader of a small but growing LGBT movement within the community. In the context of our interview, Alex asked us to use the pronoun he.
The reform that we are working on now is the decriminalization of laws that discriminate against the LGBTI community. For example, impersonation of a female, indecent acts between males and females, any indecent act, meaning even a touch, a grope, a kiss, that's indecent act. If it's done between persons of the same sex, that's an offense.
Since religion seems to play such a large role in Samoan society, we asked him about the reaction of the churches to Fa'afafines.
We have the major, I would say, the founding churches of Samoa, the LMS, the Methodist, the Catholic. I call them the founding churches in Samoa because these are the churches or denominations that have history. It's written all over in the Samoan books of history. Now, they are the churches, very traditional. They've come to realize and to accept Samoan culture. It's part of its worship and beliefs. And they are the ones who are usually very receptive and tolerant of the Fa'afafine community. They allow them to be the leaders of church groups. They allow them to be singers in the soprano section in their church choirs. But slowly, there's new coming churches, the evangelical churches, the Pentecostal churches, and they're the ones who just go directly and say, no, Fa'afafine are not part of our culture, and God despises those people. So they are the ones who are creating this culture of stigma against the Fa'afafine.
We left Samoa feeling like we knew a little more about the Fa'afafine experience. On the road with fellow Sapphic nomad Katie Cook and Maggie Young in Apia, Samoa for This Way Out.
We end this week's show with more than a rainbow minute. The universe is expanding, so why can't we?
Telstar, the satellite, and the song, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Launched by NASA from Cape Canaveral on July 10, 1962, Telstar was the first communications satellite designed to transmit telephone, television, and other high-speed data. Orbiting the Earth every 2 hours and 37 minutes, it transmitted the first live television transmission across the Atlantic, a press conference given by President John F. Kennedy. Inspired by Telstar's launch, gay British sound innovator Joe Meek produced the hit song Telstar, performed by the Tornadoes, the all-instrumental recording intended to evoke the dawn of the space age. Meek, a master of sound innovation, pulled out all his sound tricks, including a sound effect of radio signals made by running a pen around the rim of an ashtray and then playing the taped sound in reverse. Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mark Golden.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Francis O'Brien and John Dyer V, produced by Steve Pride, 3CR Melbourne's Women on the Line producer Effie Cook, Sapphic Nomads' Maggie Young and Katie Cook, and Rainbow Minute readers Glenn Lash and Mark Golden, produced by Jeff Proctor and Brian Burns. Richie Havens, Judy Small, and the Tornadoes performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Travella and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KYRS Medical Lake, Spokane, Washington, 3OCR Colac, Victoria, WRSU New Brunswick, New Jersey, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.